Welcome to the Leader's Edge, where we celebrate leadership and shine a light on the visionary leaders that are shaping our future. I'm H.R. Huntsman, founder of Leader's Edge, creator of the Leader's Edge Performance Engine and Leader's Edge University. I am thrilled to bring you stories from leaders who are making a difference around the world. In each and every episode, we champion the innovative strategies, courageous decisions, and inspiring journeys of those who lead with purpose and passion. So my friend, whether you're looking to refine your leadership skills or simply want to be inspired, you are in the right place. Today's guest brings over four decades of hard-earned wisdom from the trenches of the MEP industry, that is mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. Robert Solano has built a career rooted in quality, vision, and execution. From lighting controls to emergency systems, high-end retail to complex medical facilities, he has done it all. His journey started from the bottom and brick by brick. He has built a legacy of trust, excellence, and leadership that spans 43 years. Robert believes every project starts with a vision and ends with accountability. He's made it his mission to ensure clients get exactly what they've paid for and more. He's not just a builder of systems, he's a builder of standards, of relationships, and of a reputation forged by integrity. In this show, Robert is going to remind us of the power of curiosity, the importance of collaboration, and why all leaders should work to balance strategy and culture. I am honored to welcome a man who has helped shape the skyline and the standard of building, Robert Solano. Robert, thank you so much for joining me on the Leader's Edge podcast this morning. I really appreciate your time, my friend.
You're quite welcome. Glad to be here.
Let me just jump into this. 20 years ago, you were given the FBI Award for Exceptional Service. What was that all about?
20 years ago, when I was doing the and electrical as well, they were in the midst of an operation, and their capabilities with their network was not functioning.
Gotcha.
So I was able to acquire a piece of hardware and some programming and get the organization and the investigation up and operational within an hour and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. They were doing finance and cybersecurity.
Okay. Yeah, that really stuck out to me. That sounds very interesting. So yep. I came across a quote of yours that says this: speed and cost are never synonymous. Everything comes at a cost, but intelligence can blend the two. Now, you've been doing this a long time, 40 plus years as a leader in the construction field. Tell me about how speed and cost are never synonymous, but intelligence can blend the two.
Speed and cost, as I said, never synonymous. You can do something quickly and miss things along the way. What you want to be able to do is fully cover what the scope of work is, fully cover what the tasks are in front of you. But if you try to speed through it, something's going to fall through the cracks. So it has to have a methodology, and methodologies and that kind of management comes at a cost. It does take time. There are man hours involved. It's like the mythical man month. It's a million-hour job. You can't throw a million men at it and get it done in 1 hour. Right. So there's a point of saturation. So where I say intelligence comes in to blend it is all about the management of the project, the expectations, and what's going to be accomplished and how. So you have to start with a formatted approach, but also be agile. You hear a lot about agile systems, but you need to move with the project as it progresses and make the necessary changes, whether it be the process or the people.
Now, you've been doing this a long time, 43 years now. That's amazing. Very curious. Whenever I talk to people who've been in one industry for so long, and now you're the COO of Pinnacle, you've reached the top tier of executive leadership. What is If you could say this is the one thing that has helped me along my career from when I first started in the trades and have worked my way up to the top offices, what would you say this is the thing that has helped me succeed?
Okay, there's a couple, but the top one is your work ethic.
Yeah.
So I learned that a long time ago. On the when I was doing things with my hands or the physical labor of it, get in before your time starts,
Yeah.
get yourself set up so you have an effective, productive day. When I started moving into management, especially on the Wall Street side, I learned from some of the top CEOs in the business that you get more done between the hours of 6:30 and 9 than you do all day, because from 9 o'clock on, it's either chaos management or just following up. So you sit and you keep to-do lists. Every day you start a to-do list, you knock them down. Hopefully there's none that fall over to the next day, but make it a complete effort to knock it down. Some of the other things that I've employed is from the beginning, I don't have voicemail on my cell phone or my phone. Answer. Answer it 24/7. You answer because we're all in the customer service business,
Yeah.
and there is nothing, and we know it from being consumers. There is nothing more frustrating than not being able to get a live person on the phone and being in one of those ever-ending loops of press one, press two, give me account information, and you almost never get out of it.
Right.
So I believe deeply in you do not have, you answer your phone at all times. It's a small price to pay. I equate it to cost you a dollar to get a customer, but five to get them back. And customers will pay more for accessibility.
Yeah.
An old term that's pretty funny is when back in the day, we used this term that a company said, "Why should we do business with you?" And it was, and my answer was because we suck less than the next guy. But you can reach me on the phone 24/7. I'll give you an answer. It may not be the one you want to hear, but it's going to be an honest answer. And if I don't know it, I'll find that answer for you in a short period of time. But you know that I'm here and available. So throughout my whole career, there were times when I was traveling with family on the few and far between vacations. I was in Italy and having a 4-hour conference call to the dismay of the rest of my family. But guess what? That's what afforded me that trip, was my work ethic and availability to these top-tier customers, the top Fortune 20.
Wow. Is your work ethic 43 years later what it was when you were 18?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's what's funny. My wife tells me, "When are you going to retire?" I said, "I still got gas in the tank. I still think like a 25, 30-year-old. So there's no slowing down. And there's pretty much nothing I can't do today that I did when I was younger. The only difference is I make it a point of continually learning. If you stop that, you will become irrelevant. So I don't know, but you could probably see from what you researched on me, I am constantly learning, even to this day. So I will, if there's a part of the business that I'm going to be involved in, I apply myself, I find places to learn it from, try to master it so that those I hire to help me with that situation, it's not new to me. It's not, I'm leaving in someone's hands with no intelligent questions to ask.
Your passion for learning absolutely jumps off the page. You wrote an article called The Culture of Continuous Improvement in Electrical Safety, and I was really curious about number five. Number five was to involve and empower people with proactive leadership. I'm really curious about that. We are Leader's Edge. We are all about developing leaders and empowering leaders. So that's the one that really stuck out to me. Robert, tell me about empowering and involving people.
Okay, so there are leaders out there that will hold close to the vest the knowledge that they have.
Yeah.
That doesn't behoove anyone, doesn't serve anyone well. So being proactive is you find the qualities in those people and you foster them along. Show them once, show them twice, but then understand their limits. If you have to make a change, you can, but empower them to show them, "Yeah, I could do this too. Or if I don't know how to do this, we'll learn together on how to get it done." So now you incentivize them and also you empower them. The next go around, if another task comes, maybe they'll take your lead and use that same method on how to learn it without it becoming a detriment. So empowering is also teaching. It's not just saying, hey, okay, this is your responsibility, go do it. And if it fails, you're done. No. It's like in my book, Leadership. There are different types of leadership. Are you going to assist and bring people along, or are you just going to send them into battle to die? But if one goes, it affects the whole team. So you have to empower the team. You have to get to be in a collective where everybody's got one focus, one goal, and they know that you're all there to support each other. That's what, to me, leadership and empowerment is,
Okay.
not just giving them a title and not just giving them the authority to do something, because sometimes giving people the authority without the know-how could be worse than not having that person there at all, because they can ruffle other feathers under them or around them, and people just turn around and say, ah, I'm out of here. Or you don't know what you're talking about, which is
Right.
more embarrassing.
Sure.
Lead from experience.
Now, were you always like this? You and I are around the same age, and 40 plus years ago, it was much more a command and control type leadership environment. Did you always have this, or is this something that evolved over time when you saw the command and control didn't work and collaboration and empowerment was a much better approach?
I would say both. I was really, like you said, back in when I learned from my grandfather, who was heavily involved in unions and government.
Okay.
It was the command and control period, the 60s. Now,
Yeah,
that was command and control.
right.
But he also taught me something interesting, which was how to play chess. So chess, if you equate it to business, is more managing style because you're playing the long game.
Yeah.
Command and control is the short game. The long game is the quid pro quo. What is the other opponent going to get, or how is he going to respond to what I say? So the quietest guy in the room is the smartest, but don't abdicate. Don't take a place in the room of subservience. Also, the way you represent yourself means a lot to your customer as well as your team. So the image you project, which the first thing you cover is what, if that presence demands respect, you will have respect. Just don't be one of those people that demand respect and have an empty suit.
Right.
So measure your words, think before you speak.
Good.
But command and control in some situations, that's now my last resort, is
Okay.
command and control. But now it's more, like I said, of a chess game, but more of a dance where you have to. In a liturgical society that we're in, you do have to watch what you say, when you say it, and make sure you're coming from experience or from signed documentation.
Right.
Otherwise, those lawyers will be calling you.
I'd like to talk about another dance, and you just made me think of, we always talk about the balance between strategy and culture. Strategy, your value chain, your deliverables, your KPIs, your metrics. In construction, you have project management, you have timelines, deadlines, budget, blah, blah, blah. How do you manage, Robert, how do you manage the strategy side with the culture side of collaboration and empowerment? How do you do that dance? I'm really curious about that.
All right. So it's like a chef in a kitchen.
Okay, tell me. Yeah,
You
that's
have
good.
the meal that you're preparing. You have the ingredients and you have the helpers in the kitchen. You have to make sure that there's the right blend. You don't want the culture overpowering because then you're not following your strategy.
Okay.
But you don't want your strategy to overpower, which then turns off people involved or the stakeholders because then you lose your culture.
I like that a
So
lot.
it's a really tight rope because everybody wants a culture because when you're in the work environment, 8 hours of your day or more, 12, 14, for 5, 6 days a week, that's really where you're living at that point. And that culture is going to be solid, and the people around you have to feel like they're part of something. If
Right.
they just feel like they're a small cog in a big machine, they're not going to go that extra mile for you or really feel like, all right, this is just collecting a paycheck until something else comes along. No, you want to feel like you're a part of something bigger and be part of that family and watch things grow. You plant your seeds, you watch it grow. If the plant doesn't do so well, it needs to pay attention. You bring a group of people to attend to it. But it's all about the blend. The culture, I've been in companies that were completely culture out of their minds, where everything was culture. But guess what? Things are falling through the cracks.
Yeah.
There's no, it's great on the culture. Maybe it's too soft, but the policies, procedures, and technical are falling short.
Okay.
And then you could be way too technical. And then your culture pushes people out of their boxes. So it is a blend. And you do go through, there is an ebb and a flow in the people because they're all finding their place in the culture or the company. And it's just natural. It's either through natural attrition or through maybe this is not your space. Maybe we can find a different space for you. But if we can't, I'll help you find somewhere else to grow. But you have, the people you surround yourself with in decision making is key.
Let's get nuts and bolts. I always love to learn from high quality leaders like yourself to pass on to the leaders that I know that are going to be listening. Let's go nuts and bolts deliverables. How do you meet with your team to follow up on KPIs or timelines? Like logistically, what does that actually look like, Robert?
Everything must be on a schedule.
Okay.
So your deliverables have to be plotted out with a timeline, a reasonable timeline. Yeah. When you ask that from most people, my PMs or my supers, yeah, there's fluff in there. You got to identify, all right, what's a reasonable amount of fluff and what's not.
Okay.
There's going to be overlap. That's what you do want. You do want a little overlap, but you don't want to have it to the point where you have excessive resources there for no reason. You want to expend the resources you have for that time period, for that task, and hopefully move them on to a next one without saying, okay, for example, we're going to have 100 men on site. We're going to do apartment fit outs. We're going to be roughing. Okay, floors 1 through 5 is going to take 4 weeks. Great. At that end, are we ready to move from 6 through 10?
Right.
Or do I have to bring more men in? If I have to bring more in and more men in, we need to do a quick post-mortem. What went right? What went wrong? Capitalize on what went right
Yeah.
and stop doing the same thing twice because that's just the definition of insanity. So maybe we have the wrong team. Let's mix it up and see if we can consistently use these men as an even flow from one task in one area to another area. But then you also have different other areas of expertise, whether it be the buildings riser or the switchgear. Those are separate teams that are doing their thing, but eventually they all interconnect. So you have to make sure that schedule meets it, and then you have to sell that to the customer, and hopefully it meets their timeline because they're under a big amount of stress,
Sure.
especially with bank loans and building the building and getting it occupied. You then have to have a meeting of the minds, in essence, and saying, this is what we can do in this period. What do you need us to do? And if you need us to do more, there's going to be a cost to it. Or maybe we could change this around a little bit and prioritize. So you constantly, especially in construction, you're constantly reprioritizing your goals. Whether it's, yeah, it could be a fire alarm inspection one day, a TCO inspection another day, or there could be damage on something and everybody has to run to that area to fix that, but you still can't lose ground on the test that you had in front of you.
Are you having, but logistically, are you having like daily huddles, weekly,
Oh yes. Now there's a constant
every day?
communication. It's we use Teams, we use our cell phones ad nauseum, text messages, but there is a set daily huddle in the field on each project.
Okay.
There is man counts. There is setting up the men, telling them where they're going to be for that day, what their task is going to be, and what we expect to be accomplished,
Gotcha.
as well as overall group meetings weekly with the heads.
So daily stand-ups, weekly leadership meeting with soups and PMs probably, and okay, very good. All right. Let's go back to you mentioned earlier just your passion for learning. I counted like 35 or 36 certifications. Where does that love for learning come from, and how has it helped you in your career?
It was just the way I was brought up, and the learning was, well, I was taught again from, I come from a strong learning background. So
Yeah.
my grandfather was very astute. My uncle, who was in a licensed master electrician, also a merchant seaman for 17 years. So that's where you get the grit from. That's the can do, no die attitude. You're going to get it done regardless.
Yeah.
My grandfather, like I said, he worked for the government and in the unions. So he was very diplomatic. That's where the even keel comes from and the learning.
Okay.
And my dad was the steady, I would say he was the steady man of men, but he was easier going. So he didn't have, you didn't have, he showed that you didn't have to have a temper to get your point across. And he was very big guy, very large guy. So I learned those, like I said, unfortunately, I had to say in my father's eulogy, if I feel like everyone's a puzzle and the pieces of your puzzle are what make you up, those pieces, those three pieces, my grandfather, my uncle, my father, as well as my son, are the pieces of my puzzle.
Nice.
And that's what makes me who I am. Without one of those pieces is a void. Do I have to fill it? Yeah. And sometimes I fill it with more knowledge. The things that I can't extract from them, I have to learn it on my own without that spot of advice that I can draw from, that lexicon I can draw from. So he taught me way back, keep learning, keeps your mind sharp. It keeps you knowledgeable, keeps you up to date, and keeps you relevant. And like a lot of businesses I've been in, certifications are constantly being updated and changing. Safety is always updated and changed. But the certifications also give you depth of knowledge. You can make decisions and think ahead, what are the impacts of these many decisions? Because I've taken law and I've taken hazmat, you name it, I've taken it, and it lets you, your field, you can see the forest from the trees.
Right. Yeah, I saw stuff there from Harvard, Yale, all kinds of play, all different kinds of things. Like you said, first aid. You're a CPR and first aid instructor as well. You find the time for all this. Where, if I was gonna bring up the concept of work-life balance, what would you say to that? I just watched a Ryan Hawk Learning Leader show the other day, and he had a guest on. He was the CEO of Kendra Scott, a jewelry company. He says, work-life balance, like screw that. I'm way out of balance.
No, I have a good balance. It's really mastering your time management. That's what it is. So there's segments of my day I set aside, like I said, in the morning I get up, I'm an early riser, I've always been. The minute I get up, it's my to-do list. What am I going to accomplish today? What am I going to get out there? Getting into work and starting the process, even on the way in, making phone calls, answering emails and texts. That's getting the morning stuff out of the way.
Okay.
For the rest of the day, it's pure managing the stuff at hand. And later on, as things calm down, I start putting my own personal goals that I want to set for learning or some other activity. And I put a schedule together and I'm going to say, all right, I'm going to start this now. I usually, well, if I start something, some kind of learning experience, I go in like full hog, full fast, and I'll burn the hours to get it done.
Yeah.
But I do reserve time on my weekends to have that downtime to recoup.
Okay,
And
good.
that's what's important.
Yeah. You have kids, grandkids?
Just a son. He's 35.
Son. Is that
Yep.
Adam?
Yes.
Adam. Okay. Now you're in business with your son, right? You have a consultancy that you do that with your son.
That's correct.
Tell me about that. What's that like working with your boy?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're partners. I can't fire him, unfortunately, but it's funny. We have this dynamic, which is great. It's the same relationship I have with my dad, very strong,
Oh,
connected
nice.
relationship. But during working hours, he calls me by my first name.
Yeah.
And after working hours, he calls me dad. And
Yeah.
that's our rule because
Love it.
the doors close on the business at a certain time. And now we're father and son, but
Yeah.
during the day, we're partners and we got to act like it and
Yeah.
manage it.
Sure. If I was interviewing Adam and I said, tell me about your dad, tell me about Robert, what's the number one thing you love about him? And then I'll say, what's the number one thing about him that just irritates the crap out of you? What do you think you'd say? Number one thing I love about my dad.
He doesn't, he'd probably say that he doesn't fail. He'll give it everything he's got. And the one thing that aggravates him the most, I'm usually right.
Does would he say that, or you just say that?
No, he would. He
You would
would. He goes,
say
yeah, I get it all the time from you. How'd
that.
you know that was going to happen? I
All right.
said, after 43 years, I know when to duck.
Yeah, right. So 43 years, you and I know leadership can really be tough at times.
Oh, yeah.
What's the most difficult leadership decision you've ever had to make, and what did it teach you?
It still is to this day and always has been, is downsizing. That's the hardest part of the job because difficulties on a job or something not going well, I don't mind owning it and trying to solve the problem. But when it comes to the people, I try to keep it professional, but person in you still, it's a hard thing to do.
It is.
So I've developed a way of doing it that I hope is appreciated, is that when I know these things are coming about and I reach out to my network and say, hey, this may be coming around and I may have someone that's looking at you interested. And they would say yes. So I have a lot of connections that do the same thing I do or in the realm, and they may have openings. So when that thing happens, basically I can pull the person in and say, hey, you're downsizing and this is how it's going to be. But if you wish, I can open this opportunities for you if it's something you're interested in. And 8 out of 10 times, it's, yeah, that would be great. They get another position. I'll give them a recommendation letter if everything was good about it, and they move on. And that actually strengthens and builds my network and reputation even further.
Okay. Now, take it from that example. That's downsizing, like due to economy or maybe the jobs.
And oh, yeah.
How about when it's a termination? They're not fitting culture. They're just not performing. How do you handle that since you brought it up?
That's I don't want to say tough. Tougher is,
it's different.
Letting someone who is really good, has a family and responsibilities to let go. That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
But when it's someone that's not performing to their peak, there's different sides of that. It's if they're not performing to their peak, you give me an opportunity to do better. And if it doesn't work out, sit them down and kind of counsel them and say, maybe here is some things that I see that maybe you want to work on, but it's just not working here. If it's something that's a little more serious, like breaking a policy, rules, or safety, there's not much discussion.
Okay.
Because I can't, when you have, at one point we had about 1,000 men in the field.
Wow.
At that point, I can't risk safety for anyone.
Yeah.
Anyone. So it's a balancing act. You have to, everyone has to earn the way they leave on their merits.
Yeah.
And if they, the same way they earn the job on their merits.
What kind of, you said you still have gas in the tank. What's next for you? What certifications, what goals, what's big, what's on your horizon?
Actually looking into on learning goals, I want to get deeper into AI and finance.
Yeah.
So that's as much as my career has brought me from the earliest parts of technology before computers, honestly.
Right. No, and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My first computer, I looked at sideways. It had a green screen, no mouse, and had a big 8-inch floppy disk. And I was like, what is this thing?
I was there. So, I remember it well.
My first summer job was with Citibank before it was Citi. And I was IPLing tapes on the drives and loading punch cards in. And
isn't
I remember
that crazy how far we've come? Yeah, isn't that insane?
The old HAL days when I learned 182 key equipment, relay racks back then actually held relays. They didn't hold switch gear or music equipment.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, it was on one wheel and you used to go in there and probe it and hear the clicking of the phone. As many times as you turn that knob, it would nine clicks was number nine. So I want to learn the AI for me, since I saw it from its inception. To me, it'll always be the GIGO design, garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
So it learns from something, and it's only as good as what it's learned from. And everything has an angle to it. So we got to remove that angle and make sure what we're putting in is going to produce what we expect, but not in a nefarious way. It should be a tool in your belt, not something that controls and encompasses.
Yeah.
That's my spin on the AI. I think, yeah, create it, make it more of a tool and not something to replace or make decisions for you. Use it to make correct decisions, but don't let it make the decisions, because then you're not a manager or you're not an owner. Then you're just putting in information and taking orders. We're not deli counter clerks. But yeah, finance for me is the next thing I want to learn. I don't see myself retiring for some time. If I do decide to not retire, but relocate to a warmer place surrounded by water in the south of the United States, on the panhandle, Florida. Most of the companies I do business with here have positions down there and places down there where I can continue my business down there as well successfully, whether it be full-time or 3 days a week. But I'm a hands-on person. I have hobbies of, in the mechanical hobbies, like building cars, building motorcycles. I love machining. I learned that from a young age. So I have plenty of things to keep me busy.
What separates, or as I listen to you, I think this guy is just an exceptional leader. He is hands-on, he cares about people, always learning, models this high work ethic, he's got high motor. What in your mind, as you look at your soups and PMs and maybe future soups and PMs, what separates a great leader from a good leader?
A great leader and stand the test of time and will also be able to adapt.
Adaptable.
Adapt himself and adapt his team. A good leader will get the job done. That's one thing. Good leaders get the job done and they
Okay.
have a following. A
Yeah.
great leader can replicate that over and over, year after year, and get
Gotcha.
better at it. So it's not just being a one-trick pony or doing it the first time. I always say to myself, okay, I always do post-mortem on everything I do.
Okay.
It's
That's a
okay. I
good
did
tip
this.
right
It's
there.
just, yeah, I did this. Everything worked out well. Write it down. What did you do well? And like I said, what did you do that wasn't so well? So let's capitalize on the do wells
Very good.
and try to enhance them. And on the other ones, let's turn them over and try to fix those things and make sure that doesn't happen again. Because a new set of don't do's are going to come up depending on the environment. So you don't want that list to get heavier than
Yeah.
the good stuff.
I love that. We call them AARs, after action reviews. Absolutely priceless to do a post-mortem on every project, every deal. Yeah, I love that idea. When you do finally hang up the cleats one day down the road in Florida, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want people to say? This was Robert's legacy that he left behind. What do you want them to say about you?
Newest stuff, did it with integrity
Okay.
and caring.
Caring, integrity, knowledgeable.
Yes. That's really what I think the three things that are most important to leave behind. Not, you don't want to leave any blemish behind saying, oh, he was a hard ass or he was that. Hey, he was human, just like we are, just that he had a set of skills that helped us all get along.
Good, I love it. Let's close with this. Every one of my guests, I love the idea of sustained excellence. It's a legacy I want to leave behind. It's obviously a legacy you're leaving behind. This podcast in my life is dedicated to empowering the next generation, like your son, my son. If you were coaching or counseling a 22-year-old, and you're right out of trade school or just getting started and wants to build a great career, you got to sit this young lady down or this young man down. What advice would you give that young person? This is how to build an amazing career, 40 plus years of sustained excellence. Robert, what would you say?
Learn the history of the company. Learn the history of what you're doing from the people who did it before you. Because you can't move forward without knowing where you've come from or where it's been. So take the successes from others and learn from them. Use them as part of your future roadmap. Help that guide you. You're going to build your own way, but use those tried and true experiences that others had not to fall into the same pitfalls and learn your business, all aspects. I always said this, that there are great electricians and great businessmen. Great electricians can do anything, but they're horrible at being a businessman. There's businessmen that can sell widgets, but they know nothing about electrical. So the finding someone that can do both, that's success. Because they can run a business, they have the wherewithal mentally. And I also have told this to other people. When you surround yourself with people and a company grows, make sure the people around you are scalable in their mentality.
Okay.
It's a big difference from opening a business and having 20 people in it and having managers around you that could manage the hell out of those 20 people. But as you grow and you become 100, 200, 300, 400, are those same managers scalable in their mindset that they can manage that load?
Very good.
Because now you have the other side, your own side working against you.
Very good. Be teachable, be scalable in your
That's
mindset.
it.
Very
Yes. And if
good.
you're not scalable in those areas, learn. Pick
Learn.
up a book, find a resource, and learn it. That's it. If you have no one else to rely on, learn it yourself, master it if you can, and ask professionals. Hey, does this sound right to you? There's nothing ever wrong with asking a question. There's no stupid questions. There's just snarky answers. I try to just give straight out answers. I'm not going to benefit from holding anything back. It doesn't benefit anyone. And the future is only going to be as good as what we leave behind.
Very good. So don't be a know-it-all, be a learn-it-all. Be teachable, moldable, scalable, ask good questions, be curious.
And give it back
Give
to the
it
next
back.
person.
Very good. Robert, thank you for giving it back to the leaders that watch The Leader's Edge, to all the leaders I get to interact with. I really appreciate your wisdom. I love your legacy. I love your passion for learning. It means a lot to me. I'm sure you're an inspiration to all the people around you, and I appreciate you taking your time for us.
Thank you. This is great. I really appreciate it.
That's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us on The Leader's Edge. I hope today's conversation inspired you to lead with even greater purpose and passion. My three big takeaways from my conversation with Robert are: number one, never stop learning. He has over 35 certifications from many top universities around the nation. He's even going to take a course right now. He mentioned it on air about using AI in construction management. I love that even with his success, Robert never stops learning. That is a great message for all of us. Number two, it's where we began. Speed and cost are never synonymous. Robert has always focused on quality over speed and uses creative thinking to try to blend the two. If you can only get one of those things right, get quality right. Number three, play the long game. Don't be so quick to make a buck today that you shortcut your future. Do things with integrity, quality, connection, and collaboration. And those are the keys to building a great future. Play the long game. All right. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I'd love a five-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Listen, your feedback helps us reach more leaders just like you. That's the entire intention of this podcast, is to help sharpen leaders like yourself. Please share it. Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, leadership insights, and updates on future episodes. Don't forget to check us out at yourleadersedge.com and follow us at Leaders Edge Podcast on all major platforms. So until next time, keep pushing boundaries. Keep leading at the edge. I'm HR Huntsman. We'll see you soon.